With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. We're almost there. It's Thursday. Good to be with you. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. We appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 a.m. this morning. And Seth, how you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic, Sean.
You look good.
Do I?
Yeah, you look, well, you're kind of gussied up today. You look like you're ready to go meet with your accountant after the show or something like that.
I had a telehealth appointment last night with a doctor, and I thought, I'm going to dress up. I'm not going to let this doctor talk down to me.
Right.
By dress up, I mean I'm going to wear a blue flannel shirt.
That's right.
And I think it worked. I think I dominated the...
Okay. Did you sleep in it or something? Is that why it's still on you? Or
no, I put it on the... I wore it for all of 7 minutes.
Oh, I got you. You're conserving.
On this appointment.
I got you.
And so then I just put it back on the rack and, accessible. So I made it easy to look like an adult this morning.
I hear you. Yeah. Well, you look good. We got a lot to get to. Texans added a new name to the head coaching search, Kevin O'Connell. We'll get to him.
Kevin O'Connell, brother of Jerry O'Connell, star of The Bachelor that one season.
Right, as far as we know.
No, that was my first thought. Remember Jerry O'Connell has a brother, like a knock-around guy that – kind of was like in reality TV for a little while.
Jerry O'Connell follows me on Twitter.
Does he really?
He does.
Does he follow thousands and thousands of
people? I don't think so. I know we've communicated before. Should we try to get him on the show?
Yeah, if the Texans hire Kevin O'Connell, we should start some kind of running gag where Kevin O'Connell, along with Charlie O'Connell, is the brother of Jerry O'Connell.
Yes,
the lesser of the O'Connells. Kevin O'Connell would be second. He would be in second place amongst all the O'Connells.
And if he becomes the actual Texans head coach, Kevin O'Connell, and he refuses to come on Payne and Pendergast on a regular basis like Nick Caserio does, we should just have Jerry O'Connell on a regular basis.
Why does he follow you? Do you know?
I don't know. He's followed me for years. I have no idea. But we've tweeted back and forth before.
You should slide into his DMs, man.
That's what I'm saying. I may do that and see if he'll come on the show. We can talk about him being Kush on Jerry Maguire.
Right. I don't mean even just as an invitation to DM. Just be like, hey, what's up, bud?
Hey, what's happening, dude? How are you? He was in Billions too. Or is it?
Oh, really?
Billions?
See, that's a show I haven't watched.
You would like Billions.
Yeah,
I'm really surprised you haven't watched it. You would like it. You would like it.
Well, there's kind of like a lot of, you can draw a lot of comparisons to maybe pro sports through Billions.
Big time. And there's a lot of sports cameos on that show, on Billions. Yeah. Including our good friend Lisa Ann. She did a cameo on Billions.
She was on Billions?
She was on Billions. Yes. Yep.
Everybody's been on Billions except for me.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm like, you stupid loser.
I know.
That was what my appointment was about last night.
About feeling like a stupid loser. I had a telehealth appointment because I'm feeling like a stupid loser lately.
Put these damn kidney stones.
What did they tell you?
He's like, how do your kidney stones feel? I feel like a loser.
Well, that's normal. Just so you know, that's normal. He's like trying to calm you down. All right, let's get into Charles Omenihu.
Yeah.
Who does not feel like a loser anymore. This is a good segue. Charles Omenihu probably felt like a loser when he was with the Texans and he was inactive behind a bunch of scrubs on the defensive line. He got traded to the 49ers for a 6th-round pick, and now he's in the divisional round of the postseason. He had a press conference yesterday, Seth.
He had a press conference.
Yeah,
remember, he had 1.5 sacks in the 49ers playoff game. He played 25% of the snaps for the 49ers during the regular season.
Right.
Of his potential snaps, he played about 25% in those games that he played. And he had like 7 or 8 tackles, I think.
Yeah.
But he had a good playoff game.
He did. He made some impact plays in the playoff game. Thus, he gets a press conference this week in which he was asked about comparing the 49ers to the Houston Texans, the team from which he came.
A lot more structure. The leadership between the coach
in the gym, it doesn't seem like it's a power struggle. It's very like they're on the same page. They have an understanding of what they want. They make it very clear of what they want from GM to head coach, from head coach to the position coaches. And it's not a circus show here. You guys definitely have things down packed, and you know what you want at the players. The coaches know the expectations, and it's sought out and said. And it's not a lot of switching guys from being a starter, not being a starter. Like, I mean, you understand what you're doing here, and you just get it done.
Okay, now there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. I'm blanking on the name of the running back, the huge dude that started off in Tampa, then went to LeGarrette Blount. Remember LeGarrette Blount when he talked, when he was disgruntled in Pittsburgh because he wasn't being used properly? Then he goes to the New England Patriots, and he was actually like cool with everything, even though they weren't using him as much at all. That's what I thought of when Omenihu said that they're kind of upfront about everything and they're not shuffling people around. LeGarrette Blount had always said, well, the nice thing about New England is you know exactly where you stand. He'll tell you, like, this is how we're going to use you this week. This is how we're not going to use you. Whereas he felt like in Pittsburgh there were promises made and broken. I'm not saying that's the exact same thing as it was with Omenihu, but I wonder with Omenihu if it was more just this, that not knowing, where he was starting, but he was listed third on the depth chart. Like all these weird little games they were playing with Omenihu. It was strange, and who knows? I don't. Maybe Omenihu deserved it. Maybe he didn't. But it was strange at the time.
Yeah. So the things that jumped out at me, more structure. The thing that jumped out at me was when he talked about the power struggle between the GM and the head coach. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're David Culley, what are you doing getting into a power struggle with Nick Caserio? Do you possibly think you're going to win the power struggle with Nick Caserio?
I wonder, though, too. I mean, Omenihu might have been talking about the sum total of his time in Houston.
He could have. My son said that, too. We were talking about it last night, and my son said that.
Which son? Wait. I bet it was James.
It was James, yes. Okay. It was James.
No offense to Sammy. No. Sammy easily could have made that point. That felt like a James point.
It was a James point, yes. He said he may have been talking about the OB era with struggles between head coach, GM, you know, just general power struggles going on within the organization.
Although, I mean, maybe Culley, maybe we're underselling maybe how much Culley pushed back at times.
He did cite philosophical differences for the departure.
Philosophical differences. At various times, he said things that were either conflicting or sometimes in direct conflict with things that Caserio had said about, for instance, David Culley said that Tyrod Taylor would have his job when he came back from injury, whereas Nick Caserio had kind of demurred on the topic and said that they'd evaluate it when the time came.
Yep.
Other things like that. So maybe there was more of a battle there than we thought or we give Culley credit for.
If you look at the players that have had issues with this team, like very publicly had issues with this team, they're all guys who were here before Nick Caserio and David Culley. And I know David Culley's gone now, but they're all guys who were here before the change at the top of the personnel chain with Nick Caserio. You know, it's Justin Reed had issues. Charles Omenihu clearly had issues. Zach Cunningham had issues. Randall Cobb had things to say once he got to Green Bay. Whitney Mercilus had things to say about the tippy top on down once he got to Green Bay. Is that a coincidence or is that normal for a change? I don't. What are your feelings on that?
I don't think it's a complete coincidence, and I think it's more than you typically would have. I mean, there's been a lot of drama surrounding the Houston Texans.
Yes.
For two straight years.
It's not a normal rebuilding kind of team.
We've been, you know, right about from the DeAndre Hopkins trade on. Well, really, we can go back to before that, right from when they tried to pilfer Nick Caserio himself from the Patriots. Is that when things got weird?
Yes.
That's when things got weird.
The day things got weird was the day that Bill O'Brien made about six trades, and you're like, okay, this is not normal.
That was when things got weird when they fired Brian Gain, they tried to hire Nick Caserio, and then instead of having a GM that you really wanted, you just operated with no GM at all for a period of time. So that was when things got weird. So I think it's natural that guys would feel that way because things have been weird. And like people that are in the organization right now could easily kind of toss it off and say, well, they're talking about old stuff, not the new stuff. Now it's different. That's a completely different topic. But then I also think there's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy where – writers, because it's been weird news, and are specifically asking guys, like, hey, how's it different here than in that weird place back in Houston? Right. So that compounds it a little bit. But, yeah, it's more – lots of guys talk smack about their previous organization privately. Lots. But it's less common for them to do it publicly.
Yeah, no, just sat right down at the podium and had no problem just laying it all out there. So we'll circle back to that. Someone said it couldn't be about the OB. This is a text message. Couldn't be about the OB era. He was the GM and the head coach. I would say not so fast, my friend. Don't think that Bill O'Brien and William O'Brien, general manager, Esquire, did not have struggles with one another.
Bill O'Brien, the problem with that
might
was
might have been the biggest struggle of all.
The problem is this. In every coach-GM relationship, the battle is that the coach has more immediate concerns where the GM has long-term concerns.
Yeah.
And they're kind of constantly battling it out between those two different perspectives. The problem is that in the battle of Bill O'Brien versus William O'Brien, William O'Brien was kind of the beta. Basically, Bill O'Brien would say, listen here, you little bastard.
Give me a left tackle.
This is what we're going to do. I need a left tackle. Now, get rid of DeAndre Hopkins. Stat. I don't care how much we have to pay to get rid of Clowney. Dump him. It was a lot of that. And William O'Brien was like, okay, yes, sir.
He was,
yes, sir.
He was super scared of Bill O'Brien. There's no doubt.
William O'Brien was kind of a punk. Bill O'Brien was a leader of men.
Okay. I'll
talk for an answer.
Exactly.
Maybe a little bit of a sociopath.
Yep. Possibly. The latest name for the Texans head coaching job. There are Patriot ties, but do they even matter in this case? We'll dig in next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, welcome back on a Thursday. Payne and Pendergast with you. The latest name to get thrown into the mix for the Texans head coaching job. The team has requested an interview with Kevin O'Connell, the OC for the Los Angeles Rams. He was a name that we touched on last week, Seth, when we had the top three guys that everybody figured going into this coaching search would be the chalk, the favorites, Gerard Mayo, Brian Flores, and Josh McDaniels, all with heavy, heavy ties to Caserio and the Patriots. And then there were about four or five names that you and I touched on that had some sort of tangential tie to Caserio or the Patriots. O'Connell is about as tangential as it gets, as about as periphery as it gets when it comes to Patriots. He was drafted by the Patriots in 2008 in the third round, but only spent one season there. His coaching upbringing has largely been through some hybrid of the Shanahan, McVay. Obviously, McVay, he's with the Rams now, but he's more part of that tree than he is the Belichick tree.
He also, by the way, he only spent two preseason games with the – oh, no. He was there in 2008, and then he was cut in training camp of 2009.
Yeah, 1 year there in New England.
So an athletic quarterback with a 4.6 40, rocket arm. I have no idea. I don't know if I'd call it tangential completely, because obviously they did a lot of research on him. They would have interviewed him at the combine, all that stuff. But in terms of being part of the Belichick tree,
tenure,
or anything,
tenure is all I'm talking about.
Yeah, he's not. I got you. He's kind of like Cliff Kingsbury. Kingsbury spent a year or two maybe as a practice squad player for the Patriots. He actually started kind of almost interning as a coach while he was a practice squad player for the Patriots.
Yep.
Cliff Kingsbury did. So a little bit like that.
So McVay tree, so he's off the same tree as two guys who are still in the postseason right now. LaFleur, Zach Taylor. Matt LaFleur, Zach Taylor, both guys with in terms of their time with McVay, almost the exact same pedigree, which is OC, at least LaFleur. I don't know. Zach Taylor, I think, was just the quarterback's coach with the Rams, but that was enough to get the Bengals job for Zach Taylor. But I guess the commonality is here. Yeah, time spent with McVay, but not a play caller. Sean McVay is the one who calls the plays in L.A. Is that a concern? Should that be a concern?
I think you just flat out don't know until you know. Andy Reid wasn't a play caller with Green Bay when he got the job in Philadelphia. There's other instances of that. It really all comes down to, I think right now, and especially with Caserio, I think a lot of his decision-making is probably going to be based on reports from other people about this guy. You know, like the interview matters, but with a lot of these guys who are only one-year coordinators or haven't been coordinators at all, I think it really is more about their other attributes, their leadership ability, their intelligence, their kind of overall football philosophy and how you should build a team. I think that stuff's going to matter, and that includes, hey, I've talked about this guy at the combine with people, you know, with Kevin O'Connell. I think with all the guys they've interviewed so far, you've seen little smatterings of report of, like, these guys have been tabbed as future head coaches.
No doubt.
They have that personality or charisma about them.
Yeah, the Texans aren't the only team interviewing Kevin O'Connell. Like, he is, you know, if I had to, none of these teams have filled the void yet. None of these teams, which is weird. Like, this has been the slowest head coaching hiring cycle that I can remember. Yeah. But he is one of the guys that's getting multiple interviews right now.
These are the guys in the McVay tree that have head coaches, coaching jobs already. LaFleur.
Successful.
Zach Taylor.
Yep, successful.
Successful. Zach Taylor, by the way, I liked how steadfast he was in his approach this year with Joe Burrow, where people were very frustrated that he wasn't allowing Joe Burrow to pass more. And I think Zach Taylor was probably inwardly saying, yeah, he's coming up in ACL, you dullards. We're trying to take it easy, and he's a young quarterback. We don't want to put the entire game plan on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of patience, I think, to do that. And as they started kind of opening it up with Joe Burrow towards the end of the season, it worked out real well. So for working with a young quarterback, I like the way Zach Taylor has done it. Now, I don't know what that means for Kevin O'Connell, but Brandon Staley would be the other one.
Okay.
Which gives me a little bit of an ew. So far, Brandon Staley, you can't judge after one season, but so far he's very good at press conferences, but not as good at all the other stuff.
Staley reportedly wanted Kevin O'Connell to go to L.A. with him to be the OC with the Chargers, and McVay blocked that. McVay blocked O'Connell going there.
Mm.
So I like that.
Yeah, that he wanted to keep him around, where McVay has notoriously he's fired a few different coordinators, including Wade Phillips, for God knows what reason.
Yeah.
Or at least he just didn't rehire. I think Wade's contract ran out.
And
After losing a Super Bowl in which Sean McVay's offense provided zero touchdowns.
He blamed Wade Phillips, basically.
They blamed the team that held the Patriots to, what, 13 points in that
game?
Yes,
13-3. Surely it wasn't the offense's problem. Those three points were spectacular.
It wasn't the next year that they did.
Oh, okay.
They gave one more year. But the defense, the offense was still the lesser of the three units on that squad the year after their Super Bowl.
Yep. So, Kevin O'Connell, I don't know. We'll circle back to this, Seth. Are you starting to feel like, okay, maybe there's a shot that we're not getting Patriots South here with this head coaching hire, or is this all subterfuge?
No, I think there's a chance. Yeah. I think that Caserio evaluates himself. Like, I think he very honestly tries to evaluate himself, and he's got to understand that, man, when you start limiting the pool of candidates to people with whom you're comfortable or that have been in your little orbit, that you're cutting out 95% of candidates. And like, and what are the odds? So there's a chance that your pool of just 1 in 20 people is somehow the one that has the exact right person for the job.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit I think there's a little bit of fear that leads these guys to want to only hire their own. I mean, there's something to be said for somebody you can trust, and that's big in the NFL. Is you want to be sure you got people that aren't going to backstab you. But I think sometimes you got to go out on a limb a little bit and go with somebody who might just actually be a superior human being.
One thing it's only been a year of Caserio. One thing I can say, he does not operate with fear. It would appear like he makes his moves. All right, let's circle over to a baseball just for a minute. In the next segment, did Scott Boras give us a hint on what Carlos Correa might be okay with? That's next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Carlos Correa has hired Scott Boras. Mark Berman of Fox 26. I don't know what we're going to do the day that Mark Berman retires. He was at the airport waiting for Scott Boras, I guess, or just chilling at baggage claim, hanging out, having a beverage at baggage claim.
I've always felt like because Houston is a hub, Sean, we should go ahead and just put a studio. We should have our studio up at the airport and then just try to grab people on their way through town. If they've got a connecting flight in Houston, you know, like, hey, come on, hang out at our lounge. We'll get you a couple glasses of champagne and you can talk. You can speak a little too freely and loosely on the radio.
It's a really good idea. We'll need an endorsement from whoever's doing the parking over there.
Yeah,
because if you want to pay for the parking, I'm all for that. But that's we're talking.
Oh, no, we get to ride in the employee lot there.
Oh, okay, cool. That's not a horrible. You've had some good ideas between that and your podcasts that you wanted to do of interviewing people where their kids are in the car.
Yes,
because of Caserio the other morning.
Yeah, yeah.
You're an idea.
You're gonna get the best version of a person where they're like trying to, you know, do a good interview, but also, you know, set a good example for their kids.
Right, right. And
then what I'd do is halfway through each interview, I'd insult them in front of their children
and see how they
react.
See how they react. And we also have to mandate that it happened, that they do it while they're bringing their kids to school, so we can hear what they sound like when they drop their kids off at school.
Yeah.
Are they grumpy with their kids? Like Nick was super pleasant with his kids.
Was.
Yeah, really pleasant. He's a nice guy. You know?
I could see him being kind of even Steven all the time.
Yes.
Which is a good place to be as a parent compared to to my bouts of despair over the future of my child.
Also a good place to be as general manager of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, it's a good place
even
to be.
Even Steven. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, back to Scott Boras. Scott Boras was in, it looked like, Intercontinental Airport last night. Mark Berman caught up to him and asked him about representing Carlos Correa. And Scott Boras had some thoughts on the Houston Astros.
Well, the Astros, when you look at them, they have three or four young pitchers. But they also have six potential great position players who are all relatively young. So it's an organization that's been, you know, at the championship level of play for three or four years, and yet that can continue for six or seven if they're able to retain, you know, those true core pieces of all-star level talent that they already possess.
All right, so that was Scott Boras. Seth, the tell in that whole thing, 6 to 7 years. They can compete for another 6 to 7 years. Is that Scott Boras putting a – I feel like I use the word breadcrumb on a daily basis right now, but that's where we are with these GMs and these agents and everything.
It's breadcrumb season. There's no hot stove season because of the lockout. It's breadcrumb season.
I'm going to bring a big loaf of bread in every day now. Is that a breadcrumb for what Carlos Correa might be amenable to with the Houston Astros, extending their championship window, not for 10 years, but for 6 or 7? Or is that an acknowledgement that, oh, no, he wants 10 years, and we know that he'll only be good for, like, 7 of those 10 years?
What if he just, let's break it down to brass tacks.
Hey, look.
Look.
I'll give you know how many names we got of people who sucked years 8 through 10? Let's go through them.
The last 3 years of this contract are going to suck, but you guys are going to suck anyway, so who cares? That's forever in the future. Okay. Who knows if we'll even be around anymore?
How are we reading into Boras there?
I do like you picking up that little breadcrumb.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if now maybe the dream of the $35 million a year, 10-year contract has died with Carlos, and maybe he is starting to think, well, but what about $35 million over the course of 6 or 7 years?
Well, $35 on an annual basis would put him ahead of Corey Seager. It would make him, on an annual basis, the highest-paid shortstop. I feel like there's part of Carlos that wants to be number one at something, either total money or annual money. Number of years, he's not going to be number one because Tatis just signed a 14-year deal last year.
But yes. I think you might be onto something there, Sean.
Tell me. Give it
Boras,
to me.
Boras is dropping the 6 to 7 year time frame kind of out of nowhere. Like, I think you're exactly right, Sean. This is a very good pickup by you. I don't think this is breadcrumb thirst on your part. Okay. You're not horny for breadcrumbs. You found a legitimate breadcrumb.
I am, but this is a legitimate.
So I think that. For him to say just randomly they could be good for the next 6 to 7 years, the fact that maybe there's reason to believe that 10-year deal just isn't out there for Carlos with his injury history and whatnot.
Yeah.
But especially that last part that you brought up about the ego. And I'm not saying that Carlos has an outsized ego by professional athlete standards, but I think he's got a little bit more ego when it comes to being the chosen one, compared to perhaps other guys like an Altuve, who nobody ever thought was the chosen one until he pulled that sword out of the rock and declared himself the chosen one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly
with his play,
what
he would never do it orally. Yeah, he just said it, you know, with his play he did.
Exactly.
But I do think that might be the key. Are the Astros and is James Click at a spot where they'll say, look, we just don't want to be beholden to somebody for 10 years and have to be paying a bad player. We don't want to be Pujols in you for 5 years of our franchise. So let's just go ahead and make him the highest paid player. Maybe you got to get a little bit creative to show how you're doing it, but that at a much shorter time duration.
Yeah.
I would like that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that little cut from Boras there, it improved my optimism by about 3.4%, which I'll take. I'll take a green arrow up right now.
And the Chronicle had an article yesterday, you know, saying what we had been saying early in the morning before the Chronicle article was written, that, look, Scott Boras' clients with the Astros, it's not just Gerrit Cole. It's also Jose Altuve and Lance McCullers, who chose to sign with their own team after, you know, like without even testing free agency.
Yeah.
It's like Boras works for his clients, And he's not – if a guy really wants to stick around in Houston, it's not like Boers is sitting there telling him, no, you will not. You're going to go and get the most money you can, even if you have to play in Timbuktu.
It's interesting you bring up Garrett Cole's name because I feel like, okay, where does – Cole, I think Cole would have stayed here if the Astros would have made him the highest paid pitcher, but maybe not. I mean, he was a Yankee fan growing up.
Let's think about the
Boris thing. Hat on. You're right.
He had that sign, which his parents curiously kept forever.
I'm being stupid. He would not have stayed here.
So, that was a fake sign, right? The one that they brought out in the press conference.
That wasn't the real one from like 20 years ago. Now, if he had stayed here and it was a sign about the Astros, we'd be crying tears of joy. No, you're right. I don't think he wanted to stay here. He wanted to be a Yankee. He wanted to be the highest paid pitcher in baseball. Boris got him that. Altuve and McCullers, both clients of Boris, as you point out, wanted to stay here, willing to go on shorter term deals for different reasons. You know, Altuve still had 2 years left on what was a horrible deal that was negotiated by his previous agent. And so he realized, look, I still got 2 years left of this crappy deal. Yes, I'll take five on the other side. Lance had injuries, you know, so there's a different calculus with Lance. I feel like Carlos is kind of right in between, where there was like virtually none of Garrett Cole that wanted to stay here. He just wanted to go get paid and play in a big market. And where on the other end, it's Altuve and McCullers, where if you slice off their arm, they bleed Astro blue and orange. Carlos is right in between, where I think he does have a serious affinity for the franchise, for the guys he's been with a long time who are still here, but there is a Garrett Colean element to what he's looking for, where he will come back here, but not at the expense of his respect, not at the expense of being, like I said a little earlier, number one at something, other than his jersey number.
I think you're onto something, but I'm still not optimistic about the Astros retaining.
No, I'm not either. It's the underdog right now.
So Jeremy Pena is the other part of this equation, where you wonder if the top shortstop prospect, Jeremy Pena, who's probably going to get called up last year at some point if he had stayed healthy. Do you feel comfortable going into the season with Jeremy Pena as your shortstop? I think they probably do. And I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but if you think about how, hey, Miles Straw actually had major league experience and hadn't really shown much other than being really, really fast. And they went ahead and said, sure, go ahead. You can replace George Springer, whatever. And then they figure it out over the course of the season.
That didn't work.
Sean. No, remember, he have like 10 good games after he left here and people were crying. And I've never been more disappointed in people that I love than last year when Miles Straw, in the course of like 3 good weeks in June, became an untouchable player in the minds of these people. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Miles Straw gets traded. Like, oh my gosh, how could you trade him with Miles Straw?
Yeah.
He's the heart and soul of this team.
Dude, they got Maton in that deal. Maton was really good for them in the postseason. That was a good trade. I'd do that trade again in a second.
I don't want to bash on Straw, though. Straw showed up at the playoffs.
He did. He did. He still bleeds a little bit of Astro blue and orange. Absolutely.
I'm not criticizing Straw the person or anything. Yeah. I just felt like people got a little bit overboard with a little bit of success for Miles Straw.
I may need to pender pull this Carlos Correa thing and see where people are with their optimism level right now on Correa coming back. I'm wondering, does the lockout work in the Astros' favor? Does it matter? The longer we sit here, do teams start to get that buying bug a little bit? I have no idea.
I think that the lockout and Carlos Correa adding Scott Boras as his agent in the middle of the lockout might really help the Astros out. It's the exact opposite of what your knee-jerk reaction is.
Explain.
Well, because I think that Carlos – there's the one thing – well, the teams have a lot of things going for them when it comes to negotiating with players. But the one really big thing – and this goes with any other company, really, is that the team has multiple concerns and multiple things going on over the course of the offseason. And Carlos Correa is just one out of 50 checklist items. It's up near the top, don't get me wrong. Whereas Carlos Correa has only one concern in business and one alone. It's where am I going to ply my trade next year? Mm-hmm. And those, like each day for a player feels like a month when you're sitting out there and unemployed. Even if you have expectations of what's going to happen, it just kind of it works on you. And it starts to feel like, and even now that you've got the legitimate reason of the lockout, it just it feels like a long time. So when there's radio silence for as long as there is, there's kind of time for you to start making assumptions or start maybe having like unrealistic expectations. Mm. I think Boris can talk very truthfully to Carlos Correa about what his expectations should be, what the landscape is out there. That's the value of having a Scott Boras. I don't know what the top end deal is, like how much Scott Boras really affects that. Teams are going to pay what they're willing to pay. But I think what players really value out of a guy like Scott Boras is that he just flat out knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to make a decision between two teams, or maybe take a little bit less money here for these reasons, does that make sense? Boras is really good at that. So if the Astros are indeed the best option for Carlos Correa, I think that he's less likely to let his ego get in the way if Scott Boras is telling
him. He respects Scott Boras' opinion, yeah. Probably.
It's that counsel that you're paying him for.
Yeah.
It's not the top end deal as much, even though that's obviously a big part of it. It's Scott Boras' counsel. And maybe with Carlos' previous agents who are more, they were like half entertainers. It was the William Morris Agency. Right. They represent actors and the like big, big name actors.
Yep.
I could totally see them counseling him with an attitude of more like, hey, New York, L.A., the big lights, whatever. That kind of stuff. With Boris is a baseball guy.
If you wind up with if you had your heart set on a 10-year, $330 million deal as Carlos Correa, but you wind up with 7 years, $200 million, let's say, just to throw numbers out there, you can sleep better at night knowing that Scott Boras is the one that got you that deal as opposed to Endeavor from the William Morris Agency.
Right. If I were to sign Scott Boras, for one reason you hire an agent, too, is that they are much more comfortable being a brazen jerk than you are as an athlete that has a relationship with your team. But especially because Boras is such a mastermind, you just basically co-sign whatever he does.
Yeah.
Like, yep, go for it, man. Look, I'm the passenger here. You do your thing. I'm just going to keep my ears shut to any of the outside noise and then just help me decide what to do.
But just to bring this all the way back around to Boras saying really nice things about the Astros in that cut with Mark Berman, and I'm going to assume he's being truthful in that. Maybe that's naivete by me, but I'm going to take that quote that we played from Berman earlier this segment where he gushes about the Astros, Scott Boras does. I'm going to take it at face value. Boras does enough business with all these other teams that Carlos is negotiating with to be able to tell him kind of the ins and outs of those organizations too. Like some cultural things with those places.
Cultural things and really, that's where a guy like Boras during a lockout is probably very helpful too. He's got prior relationships with all these people for whatever reason, and he's going to prove that we're actually talking about business or baseball right now. Now, I don't think that right now. I actually think the teams are trying to stick to that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the in baseball, the sides know their place and they keep their. It's not like football where everybody's stabbing each other in the back all the time. In baseball, the owners basically back each other up and the players back each other up when it comes to this stuff. We haven't heard baseball players whining about how their union isn't handling it
right
this offseason. Whereas in football, you got guys tweeting left and right about how they disagree with the union and just don't present this united front. It drives me crazy. But I think that Boras, through all his conversations with his shortstop clients, knows what the environment is out there, probably a lot better than the William Morris Agency, who stupidly bought up 10 minor league teams, even though that's not allowed by agents aren't allowed to buy minor league teams, but they just did it.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Texans are in the midst of a head coaching search. We talked about Kevin O'Connell, the Rams offensive coordinator who's been added to the pool. Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator from the Eagles, was someone that they interviewed earlier this week. Here was Dave Zangaro, who is with the CSN affiliate up in Philadelphia. He used to be with CSN Houston. He's with Philly now. He talked with Drew Doherty about Texans head coaching candidate Jonathan Gannon.
He's a good teacher. He communicates well. He has a lot of those qualities that you want in a head coach. And even, look, I don't think he had a perfect first year as a defensive coordinator from – you know, there were some games where I didn't like his plan and there were some of those little issues here and there. But overall, I mean, you watch what he does and there's a reason he's been a hot name and there's a reason his players really seem to like him. And that goes a long way. They don't like him just because he's a nice guy. They like him because he's a very clear communicator.
That Seth Gannon is a guy who lines up. I can't take my mind off of the Tomlin quote by Caserio last week in his press conference. That was the anecdote for someone who doesn't drop a ton of anecdotes in press conferences. The anecdote that Caserio kind of gratuitously dropped in was the example of Mike Tomlin, a 30-something, one-year defensive coordinator who just came in to the interview and just wowed the Steelers into taking him over Russ Grimm, who'd been in the building there for years coaching the offensive line, who everybody thought was going to be the anointed one and the next, I think, a native Pittsburghian, Russ Grimm.
Yeah.
Gannon, in addition to other candidates, I mean, O'Connell's another one, but Gannon really kind of lines up with that sort of profile right there.
Yeah, that would have gotten the David Culley approval, by the way.
Because, what's that?
Because the players want to know why. David Culley, remember, he had said that this generation, they want to know why you're
the millennials.
Well, yeah. He said he believed they're called millennials.
He wasn't sure.
I still think that's an asset that David Culley is almost completely unaware of anything, like any discourse outside the world of
any
sports.
Any generational labeling. Like
he had that lack of perspective that I like in a coach and a quarterback. Yes. This is the thing, too, that Zingaro had said in this interview with Drew Doherty, that when Gannon was in Minnesota, that a lot of people had him tabbed as a future head coach type of guy. He's got that Vrabel quality,
yep,
that kind of that leader of men quality to him. And that's why I think that what we've seen with a lot of these guys so far that Caserio's interviewed, I think he's really going more for like personality, leadership traits, perhaps football philosophy, more so than a proven track record as a coordinator or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's notable. That is notable just if you're looking for ways that are you trying to imitate everything you did with the Patriots? Well, that doesn't mean just hiring somebody from New England if you're imitating the Patriots. If you're going to imitate the coach that worked out for the Patriots, that was Bill Belichick, who had been a veteran coordinator for a long time and was known as a genius coordinator, previous head coach. That was a lot the direct opposite of what Caserio has been looking at so far.
Yep, yep. By the way, Texan fans, approval rate on Jonathan Gannon, a poll of about 1,000 Texan fans on my Twitter, only a 39.6% approval rate for Jonathan Gannon. Which I feel like on Twitter, that may as well be a majority. You know what I mean? Like 39.6% may as well be a majority on Twitter.
Twitter skews pretty negative.
Yeah.
To begin with.
I think on something like the Texans head coaching search, too, there's already skepticism because it's kind of slathered in Culleyism.
I think that, Sean, I get that. If we go back through any given coaching cycle, I think that usually long term, the right hire, the hire that works out best, is not the most heralded hire.
That's where I get
very cautious about all of this. It's that the immediate reaction to coaching hires is notoriously shoddy at predicting exactly what happens.
Yep.
So if one of these no-name guys gets the job, I'm not immediately skeptical of it. You very much have to see, okay, how does this guy act in minicamps, then training camp, then on into the regular season.
A former Texan calls the team a circus. You'll hear it next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.